it's recruiting connections with me, Chris Murdoch. Today, one of the best hiring managers I've ever worked with, Javed, is joining us today. Javed, please introduce yourself, and then we'll jump right into the conversation.
Chris, great to connect with you again. We worked together maybe 8 years ago or so. And thank you for the introduction. I am Javed Maqsood. I'm a former operator. Now I do advisory work for many, many startups, and I've been in Silicon Valley for about 25 years, working in various tech companies, helping their post-sales go-to-market motions grow and scale and operationalize. So thank you again, Chris, for having me on this podcast.
No problem. I was trying not to say when we connected for the first time because okay. I didn't have gray hair back then. So I had more hair and I had less gray. But you know, Javed, so, you know, one of the reasons
I had more gray hair than before, so that's all good.
Yes.
But the big part is that we've stayed in touch, and you know, you've been one of the best recruiting companies that I've worked with in my career. So that says a lot about our relationship and our connections all these years. And I'm excited to be talking about connections today.
Yep. And one of the reasons why, and the thing is, I'm going to put shameless plug at the bottom. It's going to say shameless plug. We didn't pay for that. The reason you were one of the best hiring managers that I've ever worked with and my team has ever worked with is because you always took the time to connect with the team on a regular basis. You treated them as if they were part of your team. You helped us find the information we needed. You took the time to understand what we knew and what we didn't know, and then helped us get there to where you needed us to be in order to vet the talent that we were bringing in to I think it was Bloomreach. So yeah. I think those are the time you helped kind of, you know, connect those dots for us so that we could be more successful for you. So that's one, you know, I just wanted to say, like, you have remained over the last, you know, 13 years of IQ Talent's history, one of the best hiring managers I've worked with. So in thinking about that and your practice now currently with all these, you know, founders and investors that you're working with, how are you helping them to connect with the people that they need? It could be, you know, customers, it could be candidates, it could be information. So how are you leveraging that in your practice today?
Awesome. Great topic. So one of the big key points that I recall only from our interaction when we worked at Bloomreach was that you coming to me with an open mind about exactly how you wanted to drive the process. And I listened, and I immediately started to build that connection with you that, hey, this is somebody who I could work with. This is how somebody who I could trust. They have the capacity, capability of listening to me and paying attention to me and also acting on what value I brought to the table and then provide value along the way. So that's something that worked really well for me during those days. And then, you know, the building these muscles for recruiting is a step-by-step process. I reinforce some of those values as we moved along. And I recall that was really the first time where I learned a lot from you along the way too, of nailing down the ideal profile of candidate that we were looking for at Bloomreach during our growth phase, figuring out who these individuals were, figuring out their strengths and weaknesses, marrying that and connect the dots to what we were looking for, and narrowing down the funnel. Now, once we did that, really it was a matter of building those recruiting muscles so that we could reinforce some of the building blocks that we had set up during that initial recruiting process. And every step of the way, your team came to the table with really good candidates, and then we started to expand on it. We were able to go hire some kick-ass candidates and kick-ass hires along the way.
But the trust and value, you brought up trust and value. That's important in networking. That's important in recruiting. That's important in maintaining your network. But the other part that's also kind of in there is accountability. That accountability layer. How does accountability play out in the work that you've been doing with these startups today? Over the last few years, how much does the trust value plus that accountability play and helping them grow and scale their post sales, that post sales organization?
Sure. So let me give you a little bit of backdrop on what I'm doing right now. So I work with individuals who are pretty much unknown to me from the get-go and start to build these connections with them at a professional level, at a personal level, at a value-added level. All of those factors come in as I'm growing that relationship through bringing in the right set of connections, right set of skill sets, and right set of tools that they need to get from me in order to build that trust and accountability along the way. So let's say I work with a lot of CEOs these days, COOs, VP of CX, etc. And when we are speaking with them, they've come to me. I usually work with VC companies, and they provide me as an expert advisor to these startups to help them get to the stage that they need to go to. And it's a journey. Along the step of that journey, similar to what I've done with you in the past, they start to bring in their needs. They start to bring in what they're trying to get done along the way. So I'll give you an example. This startup that I'm working with right now, they're in stealth, and I'm working with the VP of engineering and VP and their CEO to help their product ideate, build the frameworks of that product, build that product to the market. The way I'm doing that is I'm bringing together my years of background in product and automation and go-to-market, et cetera. But at the same time, I'm thinking about how they would be successful in that journey. And along the way, I am looking for use cases and applications where they would be successful. Along the way comes the connections that I have built over the course of the years in order to bring those introductions to their plate and help them, talk to them about how their use cases and their problems could be solved with this software platform. So that's something that I've held along the way, and I think that's a big value add leading towards the accountability that you brought up.
Well, the accountability component is something that's kind of lost in recruiting these days. And it's also kind of lost in networking and product development, because product development is typically people. It's people that are developing the product. There are people that are going to be consuming the product on the other end. So you can build a recruitment process, but if you don't build a recruitment process that is, you know, where people are accountable to each of their own roles, the same can be said about product development, because you're ultimately trying to build for the customer, and you've got to help the hiring managers and the VPs of engineering and CTOs hire the right engineers, and then eventually, you know, the salespeople and all the sales support that goes along after that. When you advise CEOs that are, you know, on the hiring side, that are going through that need to hire to a certain scale, what is some of the advice that you give them, you know, right from the get-go when it comes to the recruitment strategies for scale?
Yeah, for scale, right? Very, very valid question. So as they're thinking of scaling and as they're thinking of building the team, first I focus in on making sure that the fundamentals are in place for them to think through the hiring lens, the recruitment lens, and the product market fit lens, right? So if you know that I am going to take my product to the market in a certain fashion, and my customer journey is going to be in this fashion, and this is the value that I'm going to go provide, along the way comes those experiences that their new hires, existing hires, need to step up and be accountable for. So I get those fundamentals in place. Next, what I focus on is, hey, if you're trying to build this organization, if you're looking for people who has the right level of skill set, what do they need to have as a core set of skill sets? What do they need to build along the way? How can you build those skill sets along the way? What tools and processes can you add along the way in order to make sure that they're fully capable of taking your product to the market and realizing that customer journey? So those are a step-by-step that I go advise to CEOs.
It's interesting. A lot of hiring managers today, they want the perfect candidate right up front that knows everything. And those kinds of candidates are few and far between. The idea of doing, you know, for hiring for a core set of skills and then trying early on getting these people to these hiring managers to understand you can build capability over time. That's actually rather novel. It shouldn't be, but it is rather novel these days. Walk me through kind of the process of how do you determine what is built, what can be built, and what the core skills are. So that's sure. that's a unique perspective.
That's a unique. Yeah. So you have a certain, as a CEO, if you're in the CEO's shoes, you have a certain product that you're building, and that product is built on certain technical framework, et cetera. And that technical framework has to be integrated, married to the customer ecosystem, whether it's a SaaS product or not. What are those core skills that you need to have in the eyes, in the head of this person who you're looking to bring in your team, so that they could be successful in getting that implementation and getting that integration done, right? Second thing is, hiring nowadays in the labor market that we're in right now, especially in the Valley, putting aside the last 6 months when we've had so many layoffs, has been quite a challenge. So if you're looking for that ideal candidate who is best fit for the role, you need to think twice and think about how you would bring in hires who's going to be applicable enough for you to get started with, and they could grow into their role. I listen to a lot of podcasts, and one of the podcasts that I was listening to last couple of weeks, one of the examples that they brought up is, you know, when I ask a candidate a question as far as what's your five-year goal in your career, and the answer that I'm really looking for is that candidate comes to me and says, I want to replace you after 5 years. Right. So the underlying principle there is you're looking for talent, you're looking for candidates who are hungry, you're looking for candidates who are smart, you're looking for candidates who has ambition and who's going to come in with all of those skill sets in mind, and then become the leaders that you need within the company to grow into those roles. So the premise really is that hire candidates who may not be best fit for the role, but they can grow into the role.
And you're not just looking for hard skills. I mean, you're also looking for the soft skills. You know,
in our trade, soft skills is super important, right? So it's not just it's an engineering job, but whenever I've gone and hired, even when I work with you, the soft skills, being able to be compassionate to customers, being able to understand what it's like to be in the seats of that customer exec sponsor and that developer who you're working with, or that business manager who you're working with, that's a very key skill. You have to be able to understand those. You have to be able to tune the way you speak to the customers along those lines. And you have to stay one step ahead of what your answer is going to be if they're asking you that technical question or business question or ROI question or value question.
Okay. This is interesting. This is so.
I've incited thoughts in their head. I can see.
Oh, I just take notes. So the company's culture and the employer brand component, and that's kind of summarizing what we've just talked about, leads to the product/customer culture. They got to all fit together. The company's culture, the employment brand, leads to making sure that the product and the customer are supported in the right way. So if you don't have a strong company culture or a strong employer brand to know what type of people to bring in to support the product and the customer, that part breaks down. So you're saying that there really is a customer culture.
There's a customer culture. There's a customer culture that you have started off with the vision of a CEO and a founder, right? So the customer culture is, I'm going to go solve these problems. And as part of developing that product, you've also gone and looked at ICP, as we call it, ideal customer profile, mm-hmm. and who's going to be using those cultures. And think about that ICP in the life of a startup versus a scale-up. Mm-hmm. That has evolved. If you're a startup, you have to move fast and hire one type of people and address customers in a certain fashion. If you're a scale-up, your ideal ICP, you're building complex, elaborate use cases to go address those ICPs and their needs on a day-to-day basis. But that company culture and the product culture of implementing your product into the eyes of those developers and the customers never changes, right? One company that I worked with, a little segue, was called AppDynamics. And what AppDynamics does is they do application performance monitoring. and they build the code that gets inserted into many, many, many applications that these developers go build. They figure out where the deficiencies are in that application that they've gone and built, and then they go report it, right? Now, if you think of the user, the ideal customer profile, they're just developers and engineers. Now, you switch that to another company where I worked with, where even with companies like Bloomreach, we were building the algorithms and the machine learning layers in the back end that allowed digital marketers to run promotions. Mm-hmm. And here you have merchandisers who are sitting with a product catalog of 5,000, 20,000, 100,000 products that they need to go come up with the right strategies to promote their brand. Very different ICP. So as a individual supporting those types of companies, as a field level person supporting those ICPs, you have to think about those field applications and then tune the way you're working with them.
That's interesting. The empathy is something that has become, it gets used a lot today in recruiting and this new generation. But empathy has been in software development for a long time, and companies that don't have an empathetic software development process or mindset, they tend not to be very successful, because it's engineer, it's that old saying that engineers build software for other engineers. Mm-hmm. But you've got to, and that software usually sucks. We won't name names.
I have several examples of that. But one thing that I preach to my clients as an advisor is that, of course, empathy, the flip side of that is also accountability that we touched on before. Build the right post-sales go-to-market strategies with vision and mission that everybody in the company is aware of, that everybody can sign up for. And an engineer on a day-to-day basis should be able to go think about what I did today applies to those principles. So it's not a post-sales or customer success type of culture. It's a company-wide culture to have that empathy for customers, to understand the customer's use cases. Engineers, product managers, product marketers, they should all work towards those.
Yeah, and it all starts as an employer, when you're building your employer brand and trying to attract people that will fit and thrive in that kind of an environment. That's awesome. Actually, you should write a book on that. just write a whole book. Just write a book on the customer culture.
That's a good idea. I'll keep that in mind. I have some other thoughts as far as what I want to write my book about, and I'm just at the beginning of the journey, but it'll probably be another year or two before you hear me talk about that more.
Well, we'll make sure we do a follow-up podcast at that point. Yeah. Javed, I think that's actually a really good, good place to stop. I think telling that journey from, recruitment all the way through to the customers that are consuming the software, I think that's a great story. And I think people will need to probably have questions for you. How should people go about connecting with you to have a conversation or even potentially use your services?
Yeah. So I am on LinkedIn as Javed Maqsood. I have my own consulting company called High Plains Consulting. You can look me up on LinkedIn. You could also go to my website and contact me, and I'd be delighted to speak with you. And it comes with some free consultations. And over the course of the last 6 months, I've developed accelerators, playbooks, as well as packages and workshops that helps you nail down some of these things, some of these problems in your customer journey, in your growth, scale, efficiency, improvement, etc. So I'd be delighted to speak with you along those lines.
Awesome. And I'll have links somewhere around the video on the podcast so that people will be able to link directly to you. Javed, thanks so much for taking the time to connect today, and look forward to many, many more.
Thank you again, Chris, for your time. And it was a pleasure. And it was a good journey back and forward and today. So I look forward to more of this with you.
And if I can find some old pictures from 8 years ago, we'll do a side-by-side comparison.
I wonder if I have that Halloween picture.
I have a couple.
We won't go into the detail.
I have a couple photos. I'll find them. Awesome. Thanks so much, Javed.
All right.
Mm-hmm.